You're listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of August 13th, 2013. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam Wade, recording for you in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Thanks for tuning in this week. We're going to get right to our roundtable, but first, Punk News editor from the UK, Andrew Waterfield, is going to play a song for you. So I'm going to pass it over to Andy, and then we'll get talking.
This song is by a band from down London way by the name of Call Me Wednesday. It's from the new album I Thought It Was Morning, which is out now on Discount Horse Records. It's streaming on Punk News, so go over there and search for Call Me Wednesday if you want to hear the rest of the record. But this song's called Bitter Boy, so I hope you enjoy it. Cheers. Welcome to the roundtable portion of the Punk News Podcast. Once again, I'm Adam White, coming to you from Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, from Southern California, Mr. Armando Olivas. Hey, Armando.
Hello, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm chilling. I'm actually just going over the itinerary, double-checking my knowledge, and simultaneously browsing Instagram.
That's almost as much prep as we've ever done for the show, so
you're right on track. And also joining us from, this is a very rare occurrence here, so from high atop the White Cliffs of Dover, the Lion of Albion himself, Punk News' number one royal baby watcher.
I'm going to kill you.
Mr. Andrew Waterfield, I can't even pronounce where you're from, so I'm not going to try.
It is 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm sitting here in my pants. Let's do this.
Pants mean something different over here. That's entirely acceptable.
I'm sitting here in my underwear. There is one garment in between the outside world and my bits. Let's go.
Yeah, all right, cool. So where are you from, by the way? Like, pronounce it for the rest of us.
I am from Market Harbour in South Leicestershire. It's a town that produces professional rugby players and very little else. It used to make corsetry for children in the early 20th century. They used to have this thing called the Liberty Bodice that was supposed to, like, strengthen kids' backs, but actually it was just a corset that children wore, which is kind of creepy when you look at it now.
That's really creepy.
Yeah, and really creepy. Harbour Museum is, like, a fucking bizarre place.
You know, weird coincidence. There used to be a corset factory here in the Falls back in the, I guess, the late 1800s, early 1900s. So we've all been part of that trade.
Corsets are creepy.
All right. Let's not talk about corsets. So anyways, there's a bunch of stuff that happened. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that happened this week. None of it is super debatable, so we're going to shoot through a whole bunch of stories and talk about a bunch of tours, a bunch of music, some videos and things like that that came online. If our loyal readers have, you know, anything better to do in their lives, by all means, go do that.
They don't.
Do I call them readers?
You
I always
call
mix
them
up
readers.
Which media. Readers? Listeners? I don't even know.
Just faithful fans.
Yeah. All of you with Punk News Podcast tattoos, feel free to tune in next week. So anyways, there was a trailer that came out for a CBGB's movie. The film is set in the club at the height of its influence. So this is, you know, late 70s era here. We first reported about the beginnings of this project back in 2010. Notably, the New York set for the film was shot in a recreated Lower East Side in Savannah, Georgia. The film was directed by Randy Miller, who directed a movie called Bottle Shock. And it stars Alan Rickman as late club founder Hilly Crystal, Malin Ackerman as Debbie Harry of Blondie. She was a Silk Spectre and Watchmen. This show is going to be entirely about comics, by the way. Johnny Galecki from The Big Bang Theory as a television manager Terry Ork, Ashley Green as Hilly's daughter Lisa, Joel David Moore, who was in Avatar, as Joy Ramone, and he actually looks a lot like Joy Ramone if you look at the trailer, Justin Bartha as Steve Baders of the Dead Boys, Taylor Hawkins as of the Food Fighters as Iggy Pop, which is actually pretty appropriate if you look at it. Speaking of Harry Potter people who are in here, I don't have his name in front of me, but the kid
Rupert
who plays
Grint.
Ron Weasley is Cheetah Chrome in this.
Rupert Grint, the Jenna.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a trailer for this. Did you guys take a look at this? Any thoughts on it?
I actually just watched it earlier today, probably about an hour ago, and I think Rickman alone has sold me on this movie.
Does it seem like it's too light? And I don't know why I say that, because I actually enjoyed the trailer and it seemed like a lot of fun to me. But I could kind of see the criticism of this being that it's not, I don't know, as true to history or serious as it should be. And I don't know if it needs to be.
Well, you know what? Part of what it did look like, it was a little bit silly and lighthearted, which I think could definitely hurt the movie with a lot of the people who grew up, you know, in those earlier years. But part of me feels, with the kind of cast that they have, I feel like it could work. I think what people might get upset about is that, you know, it does take this a bit of a more silly approach to the whole subject, but it's not meant to be a documentary. It's meant to be a film that's, you know, like just like something fun to watch, kind of like how things like Argo, even though they're fun to watch, they're not necessarily 100% historically accurate. It's just meant to tell an entertaining story based on something or someplace that exists in real life, you know?
Because this is the show and the people we have here, should we talk about Jack Kirby now? Because we're talking about Argo?
We could.
Oh, there's so much. Andrew.
I haven't seen Argo. I have no idea what it Argo. Is. Anyway, do you want me to talk about Kirby or CBGB?
Both. We're talking about CBGB.
Right, the thing... The trailer felt really clean, and I'm not sure if it's going to be an accurate reflection of the film, because trailers kind of rarely are. And I was thinking about, you know, the point of this trailer is surely to get across what the film's about to a mass audience for whom CBGB and, to a greater or lesser extent, the Ramones are more associated with T-shirt sales than music. Like, this film is probably not aimed at us. Like, we are not a big enough demographic that, you know, whatever Alan Rickman's charging is something that, you know, a film that's aimed squarely at punkos is going to be a...
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's probably right there. And I feel that on the one hand, this is something that people that take themselves way too seriously could unnecessarily start to savage.
Mm.
But on the other hand, at least online, it feels like the punk scene these days has such a shit appreciation of its history that they probably don't care anyways. So.
The thing that made me you know, tend toward that view was that the trailer ends with the Police song. And, you know, like, the Police play CBGB, but they're not, you know, they're not a New York band. It's just of all the bands that got, to a greater or lesser extent, their start at CBGB, or, you know, or their profile amplified in that scene, like, the Police are probably the band with the single most recognizable song out of all that bunch. Like, that's probably the song hook that you'd stick in the end of the trailer, and then someone who's a casual music fan would go, oh yeah, that band with the short dude and that prick who loves rainforest but has a private jet.
And also had a cameo in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that, that it set me off the wrong way when it ended that way, only because I hate the Police, and I hate Roxanne in particular. So,
I hate the Police. All coppers are bastards.
Yeah, so so that totally didn't work for me. But I get what you're saying, because, you know, if you ended it with, like, I don't know, you know, Richard Hell singing Blank Generation, that's not going to resonate with most, you know, people sitting in the audience in a theater. So, you know, I get that. I'm looking forward to this. I am. I mean, there's a lot to be said about the over merchandising of the CBGB brand once the club went away, and just like you said, how it is, you know, mainly something that people who don't really know anything about the scene that supported that club, you know, but they're still buying the T-shirt because it's become an iconic thing.
Yeah,
I'm hoping this has a little bit more depth than that, and I don't see how it couldn't have more depth than that. So, I'm optimistic. It looks like it could be fun.
I feel like I'm the most optimistic out of everyone here, to tell you the truth.
It reminded me of... Have you ever seen Cadillac Records?
I haven't.
It is a film about Chess Records and Leonard Chess, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, and Etta James. And it is wildly, 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 wildly historically inaccurate. Like, it paints this weird view of Howlin' Wolf as a womanizer, and like makes out that Muddy Waters was on Chess throughout his career and wasn't, you know, unceremoniously dropped before a comeback. And but it's a really good film, and it made me check out a load of really good records. So even if it's, you know, a solid film that's super inaccurate, people are going to be exposed to music they weren't exposed to before. Or, you know, reminded of bands they meant to check out. Because, like, I've been meaning to check out fucking Richard Hell songs for the best part of a decade, but just never got around to it. So maybe this film will help me do that by encouraging me to bitch about television and, I don't know, getting stuff wrong about television for 90 minutes. And that'll be cool.
You absolutely should listen to Richard Hell things. And television, for that matter. which are very closely related, but not necessarily the same thing. So there you go. You know, I this is probably one of these things that is going to have the kind of soundtrack that, like, when I was a kid and first getting into punk, I would have absolutely dug, because, you know, I feel like I've probably heard a lot of the stuff that's going to be on here now, so it's not going to be really anything new. But you know, when I was young, I remember there were back in the era when, like, there were still magazines made of paper that they sold, and sometimes those magazines would be sold with CDs, which were made of plastic. Every once in a while, you'd get one that would be doing some sort of, like, punk retrospective that would have, like, a whole bunch of old music that I mean, to me, in, like, this would have been, like, you know, like, the late 90s, I would have never heard any of this stuff before, and there would have been no reason, particularly without, you know, like, great music resources online, for me to have heard any of this stuff. But that's where I would have, you know, and that's where I would have heard, like the adverts for the first time or something like that, right? A lot of these first wave punk bands from either the UK or from New York or California that had, like, great, you know, singles. I'm thinking, like, that's probably the first place where I would have heard, like, Sonic Reducer by the Dead Boys or anything like that, which, again, I would have had no reason to have heard otherwise. So, you know, it could be a good gateway thing for people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was what music magazines were like here. Like, the first time I heard Sham 69 was a shitty live version off the cover of Kerrang, so that was cool. I mean, the problem that our little subculture has is we kind of rely on quote-unquote mainstream coverage, which is usually a bit wobbly, you know, like the whole potted BBC documentaries where punk started in England or whatever else. Like, this weird sort of nonsense fantasy land, or, you know, people getting into stuff through arena pop punk bands. But once they're in, they're in. So, cool. Whatever works.
All right. Amato, I think since you're on the show tonight, we have to talk about ska punk. What about ska punk? I don't even know if the definition really fits anymore. Let's talk about Less Than Jake, Armando.
Yeah, they're headlining the Fat Tour, which is actually an interesting choice when you think about it. And then the whole lineup is Less Than Jake, Anti-Flag, Masked Intruder, and what's that last band? Get Dead or something like that?
Get Dead. I don't think I've ever heard Get Dead.
I haven't either, and that's such a really weird name. But I'm actually really excited for the Fat Tour. I just missed Masked Intruder's play this past weekend due to both being very broke and very tired. So knowing they're playing with Less Than Jake and Anti-Flag should be really fun. I've always loved Less Than Jake. I've never really stopped loving them other than that one really crappy record, In With the Out Crowd.
Oh, do not talk shit on In With the Out Crowd. That is such a great album.
No, it's not. Just listen to that, what's it called, that really cheesy song about, like, loving your best friends, and just tell me that's a good song with a straight face.
Oh, that entire album's fantastic from start to finish. They just took all the horns away and went, songwriting, let's go. And then all their fans went, whoa!
No. You just described Anthem, not In With the Out Crowd.
Nah. So we'll agree to disagree and move forward.
this is really interesting to me, because I was a huge Less Than Jake fan in back in the day. And I want to say that, like, Losing Streak was probably one of the first, like, non-mainstreamish records that I was ever seriously into. And I feel that, like, I kind of fell out of, I don't know, step with them when Anthem came out. And then I do not remember liking In With the Out Crowd. Sorry,
it's Andrew, just
but... Yeah,
maybe there was a UK edition that was good, and everyone else was shit.
Maybe it's all the B sides
with a bonus track. So, but I honestly do not know, and I feel weird saying this. I don't know if I've ever actually heard GNVFLA.
I love that record. I own it on vinyl. I actually just listened to it the day they announced the Fat Tour. I listened to it from beginning to end. I just thought, if this new record's even half as good as GNVFLA, then I'm excited.
All right, so for those of us who are old bastards who have written off the band, probably shouldn't have, where is this band at right now?
Less Than Jake?
Yeah.
I mean, they're in that weird, comfortable part of their career where, you know, they obviously, like, they can't sell out the places they did at the height of their popularity, but they still sell out rather biggish venues, you know? Like, they're playing the Henry Fonda out here, which is, I think, capacity-wise, about 2,500. And I think that whole lineup will sell that place out. And I've seen them play, like, House of Blues, which ranged to about 1,000 to 1,500 cap out here. And they sell those out. So I don't know about the rest of the country, but they seem to just, like I said, they're a little bit past their prime as far as, like, touring and big draws. But they still have a big enough draw to where they can keep doing it and being successful.
And what's their sound like at the moment?
We
haven't heard the new record, so we're just speculating.
But. Well, as far if it's anything like GNVFLA, it's back to, you know, ska punk at its best, really.
Cool. I suppose I have to pay attention to this then.
Yeah, you really should check out GNVFLA. It's really good, especially the last song, "Devil in My DNA," feels very like old school, less than Jake-ish, but about, you know, trying to be lazy or trying to, like, you know, reminisce. Like, it's very current in regards to who they are as people now, but still recapturing that old sound.
They wrote, like, three records that were basically about trying to decide if they should leave town or not. So
yeah. they finally figured out that they should leave and then come back.
Yeah. And they wrote an album with the name of the town in the title. All right, so cool. So yeah, so the Fat Tour dates have been announced. I'm just trying to find those so I can give people a little bit more info on it, but I don't have it in front of me. So
the tour takes place mostly in November, and I think that, like, a couple days in early December.
There it is. Yeah, you're right. So they kick off in Florida on the 4th, and up the East Coast, across the country, and then down the West Coast, and then they end up in Texas in early December. So there you go.
Yeah, like it looks like it starts right after the fest, which makes sense, I guess. You know, that I feel at least Masked Intruder's playing the fest, if I recall correctly. So that means they just jump on right after that.
Yeah. Now that is a pretty big tour, but the other one we're going to talk about compared to that is just a fucking massive tour, and that's Reviver, Reviver, if you want to pronounce it phonetically, who has announced, like, a huge North American tour that includes their performance at the fest as well, supporting their recent record, The Beauty Between, they're kicking off in, like, September 13th or 14th, and they are pretty much playing a show a day up until the end of November. It is a big tour.
Well, the worst part is that they have all these dates, but there's no venues listed. It's like, I feel like they haven't even booked half those dates or something.
Yeah, that struck me as really odd.
Yeah, like, it's like there's 72 dates and, like, 6 venues.
You expect, a few gaps, but this is, you know.
Well, but now, I have two thoughts. That one is that maybe this band is super disorganized, which I totally could see. But on the other hand, this is a band that really subsists on house shows, on you know, little local, you know, undergroundish kind of DIY venues and stuff like that. Like, way more than a lot of the other bands that we talk about here. Like, yeah. These guys, that, you know, they play up the you know, the DIY-ness of their DIY-ness, you know, quite a bit. And I wonder,
and their mullets.
I wonder if this is almost like them saying, like, you know what, we're gonna be in you know, Portland, Maine on the 9th, so someone hook us up with a show or a basement or something.
Maybe they'll just be in a subway with a generator or something, which would be pretty cool.
I could see that. And you know what? Like, I feel like the band is getting to the point where they can't really play DIY venues in the near future, because, like, they play the same venue out here all the time. And as of late, every time they play, it's getting to about capacity. And it's, like, only a matter of time before they outgrow even that capacity. And I would hate for them to, like, you know, still want to continue to play at a venue that can't really hold their fan base, you know, in a DIY setting, because then that leads to, you know, the show and then potentially the venue getting shut down, which nobody wants. So I'm hoping that, you know, if and when they do outgrow, like, their current, like, venue capacity, you know, across the U.S., they're smart enough, or at least conscious enough to admit that they have to kind of, you know, like bite the bullet and move on to a bigger venue that may or may not be as DIY. You know, just for the sake of, like, you know, making sure that the fans get the show that they deserve. You know, because nobody wants to see a band play a 100 cap venue with 250 kids and nobody's comfortable.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, I think they're going to come up against the same sort of crap that Against Me came up against when they got to a certain size. And because the demands of the size of the band demanded, you know, a slightly larger label and larger venues, they caught shit off of their fans from before, which was kind of odd and remains odd. But
at least part of it, what remains odd so much for me is when they went to Fat, it was like, oh, you guys are selling out. Like, they're going to Fat. That is like, and that was back when like Fat was like towards the end of like their Fat Empire years, you know, where they had everybody. Yeah. And I was like, that was like the one time, it's like, what's there to criticize? They're going on the same label as Less Than Jake, Strike Anywhere, you know, Rise Against, Lawrence Arms, like Sick of It All, like everybody. Like, if anything, that's the best move they could make. And then they got their tires slashed. Didn't make any sense.
Against Me's fan base was you know, passionate to the point of irrational stupidity during those times. And
who says
and,
they're and, not now?
Well, well, I don't know. I figure that since they got onto that major, I figured like the people that were really, 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 you know, going to kick up a stink about the indie thing basically threw up their hands and said, "Oh, fuck these guys!" Anyways, now they all listen to Reviver. But like when all the shit got kicked up when they signed to Fat, like they had their tires slashed when they signed to Fat.
Yeah.
Like people were pissed right off. And I remember Aubin and I interviewed them in Toronto after they signed to Fat. It was, I'm trying to think when it was in their career.
Eternal Cowboy.
I think Eternal Cowboy had come out. We listened to like Don't Lose Touch on a Burn CD in their van with them because they were trying to show us the songs. It was like before whatever the record, I'm blanking on it, after
Searching for a Form of Clarity.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so it was before Clarity came out, after the other one. And we talked to them about that, and they were just sort of like almost dumbfounded with it too, that you know, they were gonna have people that are gonna react to that degree where you know, they were gonna go to the length of, you know, slashing their tires, you know, like actually like causing them property damage. I mean, there's one thing about like slagging off a band on the internet when you're anonymous. There's another about like wrecking their stuff because you're so mad about the company that's gonna be pressing their plastic. That's weird. I don't know, it's not the world that I live in, but again, I guess to kind of keep this on the Reviver thing, that to me feels a lot more like the fan base that has kind of coalesced around Reviver now, or a lot of that kind of like passionate folk punky super DIY thing. Like, I feel like a lot of them went to Latterman and then the Latterman offshoot bands when they broke up. And I don't know, I might be totally misreading that because I'm not a Reviver fan. But that to me feels like that crowd.
To an extent, I would say, yeah, they kind of swarmed around Reviver and Bridge and Tunnel. Not so much Iron Sheik. Not to say that Iron Sheik doesn't have a solid fan base, because they do. But I feel like there's a bit of a different audience for that band than for the other two, you know?
Which is funny, because I find Iron Sheik the one where I'm like, oh, cool, I can listen to this band.
Yeah, like, Iron Sheik's will definitely seem to be more about, I don't know, the politics of the personal and sort of internal investigation and stuff.
Essentially anybody with any ideology can get into Iron Sheik, but the same couldn't be said for, say, Reviver or Bridge and Tunnel.
As long as Bustin' makes them feel good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I hate whenever Reviver comes up, because I sound like I'm, I don't know, I feel like I sound like I'm talking shit about them, but I'm really not. They just totally don't connect with me. So, but you know what? They do with a lot of people, and a lot of people are super excited. And there was actually, if you look at the comments, if anyone's looking for something interesting that happened in our comment section, which is super rare, go read the comments under that Reviver article, because there's a big discussion about kind of the logistics and legalities of house shows, and that whole conversation we just had about, you know, are they outgrowing that, or how does that even work, is in there, and it's pretty, you know, it's pretty interesting. I mean, especially like I'm looking at it from perspective of, you know, we don't seem to have a whole ton of house shows around where I am, or at the very least, I'm not invited to them, so I'm not aware that they're happening. And so the again, like, to me, I'm looking at it like of the logistics of this. We're like, you know, how do you do that with, you know, without the police or your neighbors or something, you know, or the people downstairs or whatever getting incredibly angry with you. So it's a good conversation. So you should go check that out. We talked about Against Me, so we should probably talk a little bit about Against Me. They have a tour coming up as well. A six-date tour. This is about as big as the Against Me tour chunks that we get right now. There's only like 5 or 6 dates on Laura Jane's solo tour. So, you know, this is what you get, people. Anyways, they're playing some shows with Off With Their Heads and Hop Along. September 14th in Chicago through September 21st in Denver. So basically they're bopping between the riot fests in those prospective cities. So you can find all the dates for that on Punk News. Of course, Against Me just brought in Adam Willard from Rocker from the Crypt as their full-time drummer, and they currently do not have anyone who's been announced that is replacing their former bassist, Andrew Seward. So, yeah, you can find all those dates on the site.
Is that how his name is pronounced?
I don't know, and I thought about it before I said it, and I'm like, I'm going to fuck this up.
Because I always thought it was Seward, because when you say C-word, it sounds like it's a euphemism for cunt.
All right, it's probably Seward.
Although I do kind of like the idea that like his name is Andrew Seward, which is like some like punk pseudonym from, I don't know, the late 70s.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not.
Yeah. Speaking of announcing a bass player, I feel like sometime within the next week or so, they're going to make that announcement. You know, I feel like we're going to hear it very soon. And I don't know if I'm going to be shocked or not. Part of me feels like it's going to be something out of left field, but then part of me is like, nah. I mean, Adam Willard wasn't a shocking revelation at all.
I assume that whenever anyone needs a drummer, it ends up being Adam Willard.
Or Josh Fries.
Or Josh Fries, but yeah, that's the older reference, right?
I've got my fingers crossed for Geezer Butler from Sabbath.
Well, apparently he can't cut the mustard anymore.
Oh. So,
you said that so sad, you're all, oh.
Oh.
All right, I think we're going to break for a song. I don't really think we're super planned here, so I'm just going to make something up that
let's
we're
just play,
play.
Let's play the Let's All Go to the Lobby song that you hear in movie theaters.
No, here, I can find something. I will find something here.
Just play an Iron Sheik song. That way everybody's happy.
Are we allowed? They're super litigious, you know.
just play something off one of their demos. Demos are fair game.
No, here, I'll just play things that are that entirely relate to me. So this is going to be a song by, it's a band from Welland, Ontario here that's breaking up soon. The band is called The Snips. They used to be a ska punk band called The Ceremonial Snips a few years ago. And they were on Stomp Records, and they had a single record out called, I do not remember off the top of my head, but it'll come to me in a second. And anyways, they then became The Snips, dropped all the ska stuff, got rid of the horn section, changed up the lineup a bit, and The Snips are pretty good. And they played a bunch of shows around here. They hung out with the Flatliners, and they are now calling it quits. So they're playing their final show here in Niagara in the lovely town of Welland, where my wife is from. And they are playing a show on the 29th of August with the Flatliners and with their... Pardon me?
That's Judgment Day.
That is Judgment Day. Okay.
dun, 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 dun.
I'm up with.
They're also playing with the Ceremonial Snips. Their original incarnation is reuniting to play the show. So this is a song from the Snips. I'm going to play the single off the EP that they released when they became the Snips. This is Black Leather Vest, and I enjoy it. So here you go. Seem heard the word that prisoners only dream.
time it's in your eyes, I know you're up, we'll see if you fucking lost.
Is it where you are?
It is 3:16. I just kicked your ass.
Oof.
It's super early on a Wednesday morning. It's going to be work is going to be interesting tomorrow. But I've got like 20 cans of a diet popular caffeinated soft drink downstairs, so I'm prepared.
Yeah, what possessed you that you needed to stay up and talk about Reviver at 3 a.m. with us?
Because I'm living at home at the minute, but my mum and dad are on holiday, so this is about the only time of year when I can legitimately stay up till 3 o'clock and people aren't banging on the doors wanting to kill me if I start making noise at this hour of the morning.
Oh. All right. Cool.
Plus, yeah. I like ranting on the internet.
Well, yes, don't you know. So, any interesting British things that we should know about on this side? You had a baby?
That's weird. It's really, really odd. Like, the newspapers all went, well, like there was a thing in the Daily Mail, like, which is like the tabloid right wing rag of choice, and they published a story criticising the BBC for overdoing the royal baby coverage in a copy of the Daily Mail where fully the first 16 pages were entirely devoted to the royal baby. There's just been so much like fluff footage on the news, like considering all the stuff that's going on in Syria and Greece and fucking bits of Spain look like they're going to be on fire soon. And yeah, it's just slightly bizarre. And then there were a load of other stories a few days later going, oh, he might not be king until 2062. And I'm like, well, yeah, because he's just been born and these fuckers live for as long as they like, apparently. But yeah, it's a really weird deal. And yeah, the monarchy, they kind of freak me out.
Well,
yeah,
it's just sort of embarrassing to, you know, when people rock up at, I don't know, like a G8 summit or a G20 summit or the United Nations, and it's like, oh, hey, all these head of states are here, except that guy who's the prime minister. Because the head of state is an old woman whose only right to that kind of power is that her dad had that kind of power. It's just a kind of weird anachronism that we ostensibly keep around, because otherwise we'd have to think of something else to put on one side of our coins and tourism.
Yeah, we have the same problem. I mean,
yeah, the exact same problem. It's
although. There was that bizarre scenario that has happened, or hasn't happened, I guess, where I don't know, there was something I'm going to screw up the terminology for your great nation, so I'm sorry, but England or Great Britain or whatever the fuck you guys call yourselves, where they went and they changed the laws of secession so that if this baby was to be a girl, then she could be queen.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, all of us out in the colonies didn't change our rules, because it would require, like, reopening our constitution, and we decided that reopening our constitution is a big fucking hairy can of worms, and we're not gonna do that just for the monarchy.
Yeah, so basically, if someone dies in the wrong order, as people sometimes want to do, then
you could have a king and we could have a queen.
Yeah,
or vice versa, I guess.
Really strange system. Like, I'm not sure if it's still the case, but for a very, very, very long time, it's either still the case or it was up until recently. Like, the monarch wasn't allowed to marry a Catholic. It's some really weird, because basically, like, in the 17th century, toward the end of the Tudor stuff, like, well, I think it was either 16th or 17th, like, the Henry VIII died. And then his son, Henry VI, took the throne, died really quickly because he was, like, super sickly and inbred. And then Bloody Mary takes the throne. She was Catholic, so she effectively persecuted loads of Protestants. And then when she buggered off, Elizabeth I takes the throne. She was super Protestant because she was, like, a daddy's darling girl, and then she started persecuting a shitload of Catholics. Yeah, we had this weird sort of back and forth where, yeah, sectarianism. Stupid. Anyway,
what are we talking about? Red City Radio, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, so, that's the thing.
Yeah. Anyways, everyone's favorite retailer, Hot Topic, debuted a new song from Oklahoma City's Red City Radio. The song is titled "Show Me on the Doll Where the Music Touched You," which is really stupid. And
well, to be honest, all of their song titles tend to be really stupid. I love that band, but that's their thing.
I hate that thing. I know, I like the band too. Anyways, the song is set to appear on their upcoming album Titles, which is due out on October 15th.
They released in 2011 The Dangers of Standing Still, so this is following up that. And the band will be hitting the road soon with Big D and the Kids Table. So did you guys take a listen to this?
I just said ska, that's all.
Oh, okay. I thought you said ah.
No, I said ska.
Back
to the discussion.
Oh. Anyways, yeah, Big D. So, Red City Rager, did you guys take a listen to this? Are you fans of the band?
Yeah, I had a little listen.
I did. I like the song. I hate lyric videos, though. They're the bane of my existence. I wish they would stop.
Me too. That makes me happy.
It just makes me feel like I should be in the back room of a dingy pub singing karaoke.
You know what it makes me feel like? Is it makes me feel like those 90s cartoons or TV shows where they had the little ball bouncing on the lyrics.
Yes! Sing-along songs.
He's like, all right, everybody, now it's that time of Sesame Street where we have our sing-along song. And today's song is a song by Red City Radio. Yay!
Honestly, it makes me feel like they... Like, it puts undue importance on the lyrics, which is a weird thing to say, because like the lyrics to a song are important, don't get me wrong, but that they're being written because they hold some sort of, you know, special meaning outside and above of, you know, the actual music and the context in which they're being played. Like they're being like scrawled in like whiteout on someone's binder in like, you know, ninth grade, because, you know, this band super speaks to them, and you know, it's totally, this song is about their breakup. Like, I don't care what the song is. If they lyric video it, it seems like a teenager is using it to express their heartbreak to me.
It also smacks of a lack of effort, because, I mean, you could knock a few minutes of live footage together pretty easily, or you could do the, you know, Bob Dylan bit with bits of the lyric on cards or whatever else, just to make it visually engaging. Otherwise, it may as well just be, you know, streaming sound, because it's not like it's difficult to make out the lyric.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about a power violence band.
Yeah, and that's what I hate about a lot of these lyric videos, is my first assumption is that they think that I'm dumb.
Hmm.
It's like, you could never figure out these lyrics on your own, so here they go, dum-dum.
You know, the sad truth of it is, for me at least, is that, like, I probably don't know most of the lyrics of the bands that I listen to, and this is this is not an unusual thing when it comes to loud and fast music. Like, I probably miss a good chunk of what the people are actually saying, but I'm not here for like a poetry slam, so that's okay. Like, I can fill in the blanks. But yeah,
I like that stuff though. It's like, you know, when you eat a Snickers really quickly, other nutty chocolate bars are available, and you get like a nut stuck between your teeth, and then like, you release the nut later on, like maybe hours later, you'll get that like little nugget of extra food. That's what like working out a lyric after a number of years is to me.
Like, that was the weirdest analogy.
When you mentioned the Snickers bar and eating it, I thought you were going to say, and then you transform back into who you really are. You're no longer Robin Williams. Have you not seen any of those commercials?
Oh, we've got like, God, who is it? It's some like diva thing. I think it might be Joan Collins, and like someone goes, oh, you turn into a real diva when you're hungry, and then this bloke, and he's not Joan Collins. It's weird.
Yeah, ours are similar, and pretty much the way that like it goes for each commercial is they've done like four or five. It's like, you're not you and you're hungry, have a Snickers. And so like one of them is like, it's a football coach, but he's being played by Robin Williams, and he's like, this one is for Mother Russia. And he's like, coach, you're not you when you're hungry. They give him the Snickers bar, and he eats it, and you transform back into the coach. And he's like, you feeling better? And he's like, yeah. No, let's play some football! And it's all... You know, so I guess our commercials are better in regards to Snickers promotion. And I like how this is the Punk News podcast, and we're talking about corporate like sponsorship and commercials.
You know, it's just a chocolate bar with some nuts. It's all right.
And nougat and caramel.
Yeah, fuck that. I'd just have a chocolate and nuts any day of the week. I don't even know what nougat is. It's like the weird sort of mushy stuff.
It's like that weird white, like soft marshmallowy stuff. I couldn't really tell you what nougat is. I just know that it exists.
Well, you know how bees make honey?
Yeah.
Wasps.
Wasps make nougat?
Yeah.
Is that the Eddie Izzard bit? Earwigs make chutney?
I don't know if you're being serious or not, Adam.
No, I am.
Oh. That's good to know. I've just never looked into nougat.
Yeah, if you don't believe that wasps actually make nougat, you can email podcast@punknews.org and we'll explain how. Anyways.
Just explain how right now.
No. If you delve into my lie, it's gonna just fall apart. So, I mean, you could have just looked that up on the internet.
I just Wikipedia.
Although I'd love that to become like one of those Google auto fill in search things. Like, do wasps make nougat?
Nougat.
Yeah, you're a liar. I already.
Alex Wikipedia Jones is nougat. All over this right now.
Anyways, let's talk about more lyric videos, since we like lyric videos so much. Flatliners, another former ska punk band, that seems to be a theme tonight, they posted a lyric video for the song Drown in Blood. The song is set to appear on the band's new album, Dead Language, which is due out on September 17th on FAT and follows up 2010's Cavalcade. So that one is up as well. Did you go check that out? Or?
I did. I was into it, but my initial reaction is, what took these guys so goddamn long? It's not like they have to pay for to make their records. They're Canadian.
Everything is free here. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, because your government subsidizes their recording and stuff. All they really need is a distributor. So, I mean, in this day and age, like, they could have easily put it out themselves. Or I don't know what took so long for them to be like, yo, Fat, put this out.
It's not that straightforward. It's not like we all just have like a check being delivered to our house that we may or may not use for recording punk records.
I mean, last time I checked, you know, a Mountie just shows up to your door every month with a bag full of money, riding a moose and eating a nice latte from Tim Hortons.
I would never get a latte.
How many
Hortons.
People are there in Canada?
It's like 32 million or so. 34 million, maybe. It's not that big. I mean, it's a big country, don't get me wrong, but we each have like a whole shit ton of land for ourselves. Population of Canada.
Adam 34 actually,
million. There you go.
Adam actually owns one-fifth of a whole mountain.
Yeah, if you actually like spaced Canadians out so that each one was as far away from, you know, each other as they could be, we would each have a shit ton of land. We're actually all jammed around the border because it's warm there. But that's how that works. So anyways, yeah, Flatliners, Drown in Blood. You know, the song was cool. I want to hear what more of this record sounds like. I was a huge fan of Cavalcade. I liked the ska punk stuff too, but don't get me wrong. But man, Cavalcade is one of my favorite records recently. So, yeah, I'm hoping this is really good. I'm seeing them at that Snip show that I talked about before I played the Snip song. So anyways, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So yes, you can find that video on Punk News as well. Anybody else to talk about?
We've got Black Flag and Direct Hit.
Oh, Black Flag.
And Flag Flag.
All right, well, we should mention the Direct Hit thing first. Not something super controversial or anything that that I think we're going to dwell on for a long time, but I'm sure that Red Scare Toby would get really mad at us if we did not mention it, because he really bankrolls everything that happens at Punk News these days. Direct Hit has announced that their upcoming record will be called Brainless God. It is their debut for Red Scare Records. The record is due out digitally on September 3rd and physically on September 10th. Singer Nick Woods commented that it is a full narrative concept album about the end of the world, the details of which will be rolled out in the coming weeks.
Oh, yes.
So there you go. What else do you guys need to know here? The album was produced by Mike Kennerty of All American Rejects, who previously worked with Ben Weasel on his solo material and the most recent Screaming Weasel record. So there you go. Direct Hits, Brainless God. It's 12 songs, and you can find the cover art and the track listing and some other info on Punk News right now.
Yeah, actually, I checked it out, and I was pissed off they didn't put a song out. Or did I miss the song?
No, there's no song. This is the shoddy show that Red Scare runs over there.
Well, like, I can kind of understand it, because, like, I mean, a lot of albums seem to be a collection of songs now. Whereas if this is, in fact, you know, a single continuous narrative, it could be could just be that, you know, Nick's looking to you know, have it put out as a single, you know, as a single object, as a single creation. I'm kind of excited that the dude from All American Rejects is involved, because that the last Ben Weasel solo record before he went round the pale was really good, like the one where like All American Rejects were involved and Dan Andriano did bass parts. These ones are bitter. That is a great record, and I'm super excited for this, because you know it's a fucking concept album about the apocalypse. What could possibly go wrong?
Everything and nothing. All
it could be
time.
Punk rock Diamond Dogs. This is awesome.
I mean, I'm excited. I just, like I said, I'm just a little disappointed that they didn't put a song out. Like, I wanted to like then be like, or even like a teaser, like here's like a 30-second clip of the apocalypse in, you know, record form, you know, and especially because the album comes out in less than a month.
There you go, Toby.
Yeah, Toby. Where's my sack of money for your plug?
All right. Black Flag. We talk about Black Flag on this show every week for about 45 minutes per show. John Gentile's not on the show this week, so we're only going to talk about them for about 3 minutes. So this is your reprieve.
I thought it was Gentile. Is it? Have I really been pronouncing
we'll warn you
it?
It is Gentile. Have a Black Flag tattoo, Gentile. So we'll have things to say.
Well, luckily, I just call him JG all the time, so that kind of saves me the trouble of mispronouncing his name.
I can't pronounce anything, so it's totally forgivable. Anyways, yeah, there's a new Black Flag song that you can listen to if you're American.
I listen to it.
Oh, fuck. Well, okay, if you're not Canadian, you can listen to the new Black Flag song.
Yeah, fuck you, Canada.
It's just no homers. We're allowed to have one.
Yeah, I guess. Anyways, it's called Wallow in Despair. It was, of course, released amongst all of the shitty Black Flag lawsuit drama that is happening right now. Again, you can look at like any article on any music website ever or any of the past 10 episodes of this podcast for like a full detailing of that. I don't know what that was. Apocalypse, perhaps. But anyways, so they have released another song from their upcoming full length. Which is still untitled and still without a release date. When the album is released, it will be the first new Black Flag studio album since 1985's In My Head, and the first Black Flag release with Ron Reyes exclusively on vocals since 1980's Jealous Again EP. So a lot of history packed into this thing. The song is called Wallow in Despair. You can listen to it if you live in one of the privileged countries. If you don't, when you click on the play button, it says, "Sorry, not available where you are. Leave your email, and we will spam you." So that's all I got.
Yeah, up yours, Canada.
I guess.
Yeah.
This is because we didn't go to war in Iraq like you guys.
Yeah. It's also because you haven't been doing a good job of handling the snow.
It's just every year.
Yeah, but I actually listened to the song, and I believe this is the third track they've previewed from the album. This is the first one that's actually good, you know, because the first two are horrible.
Yep.
Like, they were so, and so I was like, you know, this could even be the only good song on the record. Who knows? Like, well, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. But I was kind of excited to be like, all right, you know, in spite of, you know, Jin being a total fuckhead, he was able to write at least one good song.
I was listening to it and I was thinking, like trying to work out what it might be about, and then I thought of Wallow in Despair. Well, that's pretty much what it's like to be a Black Flag fan in 2013 at the minute. But yeah, it's just kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, whenever Canada is able to listen to it, I'm sure you might enjoy it, Adam. But until then, we're just gonna have to gloat about it. I guess this is the trade-off for your free bags of money and healthcare.
Yeah, I know.
Kings ban Canadians because of their ill treatment of stray cats.
Alright, that's all the punk news. You want to talk about comics?
Yeah, let's fuck it. Let's talk about some fucking comics. Infinity starts tomorrow, and I am psyched.
Now, I haven't actually, because I know there's, I think the last issue of Avengers and New Avengers was supposed to be like the prelude to Infinity, but I didn't read those, so I don't know if I was missing out on anything important or if I can just jump in tomorrow.
Nor did I. I'm like a trade waiting bastard. Like, in my experience, Marvel have generally pretty good at, you know, putting out events that you can just sort of jump on with the first issue. And like, because event books are the only thing I read in single issues.
Yeah. No, like, I continuously buy single issues for pretty much everything. I don't know if I could, because with the way Marvel and DC drag their feet, it's like I have to wait like 7 months, like, or 8 months, or even like for like the trade or hardcover to come out. And usually it's hardcover first, and I don't want a hardcover most of the time. I just want to trade paperback. You know, I don't need the extra, like, hardness, for lack of a better phrase. Just give me the damn story.
At the minute, we've got a really sweet deal in the UK that I'm sure, like, either, like, they've got a long-standing deal that Marvel can't get out of, or Marvel just don't know about it, where, like, UK editions of the trades come out through a third-party Panini. Either the week of the hardcover direct market release or the week before. So a lot of the time, like, we'll get a collection a week before everybody else in the world for half the price. And it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, no, like, they'll put out the hardcover, like, a month after the event ends, and then they'll put out the trade paperback, like, 6 months after that.
Like, Age of Ultron's coming out soon, and it's like the hardcover's got loads of the, you know, crossover tat in. It's like $50, but a couple of weeks later, you can get Age of Ultron as a softcover for like £13, which equates to about, what, $18?
I don't know. I think it's closer to $22. Could be wrong, though.
No, it's like, well,
to the Google.
Maybe there's two. Maybe there's, you know, the core miniseries, and then there's like the Ultimate Edition with all the crap you didn't care about that universe we established for one issue and then retconned.
Yeah, and then Wolverine stabbed himself or something.
Yep. I actually kind of enjoyed Age of Ultron. Just kind of suffered from that, oh, we can't possibly get a single artist for an entire crossover thing that Marvel does now.
Well, what annoyed me was that I feel like it was 8 issues, but they could have easily done it in 4. Possibly 5.
Oh, definitely. And then they got to the end and they were like, hey, spoilers, it's Angela, the character that wasn't really a character in Spawn in the 90s. Get stoked.
Oh, well, not I'm even like, yeah, but that's, like, that's,
you know, the other what thing, Marvel the other needs that least is like a poorly developed, underdressed, you know, woman warrior archetype, but whatever.
And then the other part was like, oh, hey, looks like the Ultimate Universe is going to end. Sorry about that.
You guys really went on this. I wasn't intending to inflict this upon people for that long, but
I like that they're doing. I mean, I really, really love Brian Wood's stuff on Ultimate X-Men.
It's good.
He just gets to sort of, because he gets to play, you know, because he gets to introduce, you know, his politics and his examination of, you know, like the real world ramifications of political conflict that he was, you know, looking at in DMZ or Channel Zero or whatever else in an X-Men book, which is so cool. So
alright, that was our show. Thanks for listening. Any of the opinions on tonight's show are those of the people that spoke them and do not necessarily reflect that of punknews.org. Thanks to the bands Color Me Wednesday and The Snips for providing us music, and thank you to Fat Records for providing Nightbirds as our intro music. This is it for the Punk News Podcast of August 13th, 2013. I will see you guys next week, or someone will, and if you need anything from us in the meantime, email us at podcast@punknews.org. Thanks for listening.